You know, it's faster, it's smoother, it's better interface. I mean, it just works better.
Welcome to Noise and Notes, WFPL's political podcast. First up, we talk with Time contributor and freelance writer Carrie Stimley, WFPL's afternoon anchor Susan Sweeney Crum, and University of Louisville professor Ralph Merkel about the changes at WDRB in its dispute with Time Warner, and also their pickup of two top Courier Journal sports columnists. Were any of you surprised by the fact that WDRB went off the air? I mean, we've heard about these contract negotiations before, but I had never seen a channel removed from the air. Ralph, we'll start with you.
Yeah, it's happened before. It's happened in other markets as well. And Time Warner has a very valuable, enormous city contract, and they're able to use the sledgehammer of, we'll take you off our air if you don't accept what we're offering you for your content, because it's really all just content. And the channels that they know are highly watched, they pay a lot more for, so like ESPN and other things like that. Time Warner has to pay a fair amount of money, but Time Warner also has millions and millions of customers all over the country, and they are an 800-pound gorilla in this. And little Channel 41, hey, but we're the number one Fox station in, and Time Warner's like, so? This is what we'll pay you this time, and you'll accept it, or we'll put on the Country Music Channel, which was on for a while.
Now, in a week's time, it was taken off the air. Now it's back on. But, Susan, I mean, what's the message of that? I mean, as a former WDRB employee, I guess, for news reporters and people who work in the newsroom, is that a bit daunting to have, you know, for a week's time, half of your audience gone? I mean, or does that even matter now that they're back on the air?
Well, I mean, I was maybe a little bit surprised they went off the air, but not surprised that they worked it out. I mean, you knew it was going to work out sooner or later. Just someone's going to give, and they're going to be back on the air. So I don't think, I mean, I can't speak for people who are there, but I, you know, so much is on the web anyway. Everything they're doing, people could find on the internet. And I'm sure they all figured sooner or later we're going to be back on the air. So, I mean, I guess in some sorts, because like when the power used to knock us off, you thought, oh, well, crud, we're doing all the sort, no one sees it. But they were seeing it on the internet, or they were streaming on another area. So, you know, they may have had a little feeling.
You have the crafty ways to come up with.
Well, I mean, they're just, they may have felt, why am I doing all this work and no one's going to see it? But in the end, everybody did, because they could stream it, more than likely.
Well, there's also AT&T U-verse in town, which is growing as well. I thought it was pretty significant. I was surprised, but based on what I'd heard about others, you know, not unprecedented. I think it was crucial, though, the longer it went, it was going to be pretty problematic for DRB. Just for example, their morning show has been really racking up good ratings. So if you're dark, you know, there's a lot of people that will access content on the internet, but I still think there's a lot who won't, that are just straightly over-the-air consumers. And if you give them an incentive to try HAS's or Waves or LKY's morning show, if they've been watching yours, and who's to say they're going to come back?
Because aren't TV viewers, risky. Aren't they routine? I mean, if
routine,
I watch
and they're
Fox
lazy.
41.
Yeah. They are lazy
you
as make, heck.
If you get me on WHAS,
I'll stay there.
I'm staying there.
And they are lazy. And it was funny because I follow some reporters from WDRB, and they were saying on Facebook, hey, you can get out your antennas and watch us. Well, you can get out your antennas if you have a digital television, because if you have a television that's like 6 or 7 years old, rabbit ears don't work with it because they switched it all to a digital signal. So people are lazy, and they will just, 41 isn't on. Let's see where else I can get
and
my
the fact that they just insulted them by putting on ESPN Network and the Greater
American Country
Station.
Yeah, just like,
a slap in the face. I mean, that's what we think of your programming.
But they were still on Dish, right? Because we don't even have cable, so I don't.
They were on Dish, AT&T, but for someone like me who, you know, is still on cable, I flip. I'm thinking I'm just going to see the dark screen or the blue screen saying, you know, they're off the air. And I'm in here and I'm seeing, you know, country music.
What? I love country music.
I'm not saying anything bad about country music.
It's not what you expect.
I just didn't think they would replace. I mean, that was one thing to take them off there, but to replace them was another thing.
It was kind of interesting how cheeky both sides were getting. I think, you know, the way it played out is probably just a blip. But had it gone on longer, I think it would have been very problematic for DRB. So, you know, just think if we'd gotten into NFL season.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And more than half, a big, big chunk.
Thank goodness American Idol was
watches on cable. Yeah, really. Who's going to watch So You Can Think You Can Dance or whatever else is they show in the summer?
Now, does Lamb take a hit on this? I mean, I would think that, you know, he stood his ground. Those who are against corporate media might, you know, side with him. But as you pointed out, I mean, still owned
they're
by
owned
corporate
by an
media.
Out-of-town company.
Yeah, they're owned by an out-of-town company in Toledo. But does he lose anything from this?
I'd like to hear Ralph's answer to that.
You mean lose monetarily?
Monetarily, but also reputation in the community. I mean, does he take a political?
Well, I believe
as well?
Is he not the only GM who regularly goes on the air with commentary about community issues? So he has that going for him. I don't see any other.
So this may actually help him.
I think so. Hey, everyone loves someone who wants to beat up on Goliath, especially when Goliath wants to take more money out of your pocket.
And if he seems principled,
yes,
I think he actually wins. Because I think he somehow he worked it out. Now we're obviously not privy to the details, but both
and never
sides,
will be.
Yeah, both sides obviously found it acceptable. I mean, there's a lot of posturing that goes on in this, and they all kind of
right. The full page ad in the Courier Journal was, you know, I thought wonderful because that way all the people who read the newspaper, which is a shrinking, dwindling number of people, could see what Channel 41 thinks about this fight. Just as I think Time Warner had a full page ad in the paper and over the weekend. At some point, they both were like. Put their positions in the paper.
Now, what's interesting is that it did intertwine with the newspaper in this way, and since the Rick Bozich and Eric Crawford, the two sports columnists for the Courier Journal, jumped ship in the midst of them being off the air, and now they work for WDRB. Kerry, my first thought I had, to be quite honest, was the Courier just put up a paywall, and two of the chief reasons to jump over that paywall are now on WDRB.
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, I have to be honest, that was shocking to me. Again, you know, wish I was privy to really what's going on. It would indicate that maybe they know something that we don't. But, you know.
These are lifers. I mean, Eric Crawford loves the Courier. He says even today, that is my dream job.
You know, it's interesting, though, and I really appreciate how Eric conducts his business because he's on Facebook. Eric's really an open guy. We'll talk to you about anything, more so than Rick. I mean, I don't think Rick is not, but I think Eric's just particularly good at it. And he's actually written about this already, and I think, you know, if you take him at face value, and I don't have any reason not to, he's very open about, he was a little discouraged about seeing so many of his colleagues, and then 40s getting on there, who, Pat, a previous Courier columnist, you know, and that's a legacy job there, the sports columnist at the Courier Journal going back in history. It's always been a really prestigious, important job and a rare job. And 40 even said, while he's commenting on Eric's page, it's not the dream job it used to be. I think it's still a good job, and Eric would tell you that. But Eric, and then again, can you take him at face value? I am. Eric said that he really was attracted by the WDRB and Bill Lamb have a lot more autonomy relative to what's going on at Gannett. Certainly, DRB is part of another company, but I understand that Lamb needs to make one call and get approval from one guy to do stuff here. That's got to be attractive to people who've been working for Gannett and that decentralized. Top down, you know, and you see your colleagues in this latest buyout, Ralph, you know, mm-hmm. A lot of institutional knowledge and experience went out of that building. And so,
but why does the Courier get hit in defense of them? Why do they get hit for having an out of town corporation that runs them? And WDRB didn't get hit.
Well, right.
For that.
WDRB's owners are in Toledo, Ohio.
I think
they're a corporation too. They're nothing the size of Gannett, but I think that. The people who work at Channel 41 fool themselves if they think that they work for an autonomous organization, because if that they start losing money over there,
you get cut out of the budget because I experienced it. I mean,
there you go.
When we started at 41, money was good. The economy was great. 41 was a great place to work. I loved it. But as soon as that economy went south a little bit and I was a part-timer and in their words, became a luxury they could no longer afford. I mean, they were paying me to do something that eventually they paid somebody else to do two shows instead of one. So, you know, when the economy went south, they can cut just as fast as the next person.
Is it because the Courier is seen as this sort of precious, sacred cow, and that's why people are more critical of it having corporate ownership than maybe a television station?
I think because it was, for so long, was owned by a family that was willing to invest a ton of money into its reputation, into the growth of its coverage. The world, you know, the Courier Journal covered the world almost literally. I mean, they had correspondents in other countries. And of course, now they rely on, just look at the Courier Journal, compare the number of pages in 2012 to what it had in, let's go back 20 years only, so 1992. And then if you go back to 1982, which when it was still a Bingham paper, much larger paper with much more robust coverage. And again, the other important part is institutional memory. And Kerry, you mentioned two sports guys who know this town and know basketball, the Kentucky Derby premier events. They are now working for the competition.
Mm-hmm. It's a game.
And probably had there's no such thing as a no-compete in newspapers, but maybe they should start thinking about that as organizations keep poaching.
Yeah, we're going to see that. We're going to see.
I'm not sure anybody saw this coming. Well, I wanted to pick up on Ralph's point. Sure. The Binghams also had, you know, whether it was real or not, a sort of a sense of altruism. Mm-hmm. Now, that is a long gone.
Just like
aspect.
The King family in Seattle, families that owned a bunch of media properties and saw them as a public trust.
And, you know, that institution is longer. I mean, it's been around a lot longer than any of the TV stations, especially DRB. So, I mean, the sense of loyalty and ownership probably isn't there the way it is with the Couriers, which could add to what you were talking about, Philip, why this, you know, it all gets so pronounced toward the Courier.
Right. Do you guys read the Gannett blog?
Yes.
And I've been reading that for years. And again, it's a disaffected former Gannett employee.
Yes.
And there is tons of posts by someone named Anonymous. But there were a lot of comments on it when this news broke earlier this week. And one person claimed to be a publisher at a Gannett property and was saying pretty much what people were complaining about is true. My hands are tied. Arlington, Gannett's headquarters, tells me essentially what I will do and how I will do it.
We are worse off without the
Courier. Oh, of course we are.
I mean,
of course we are.
That would be a world which I would not feel comfortable in from a media standpoint.
I mean, you know, everybody's talking about what's gone on in New Orleans. The Daily paper there just cut back
to
3 days a week.
Yeah.
And the people I know that live down there are mortified and really saddened and concerned about that.
Well, thank you, Carrie Stimley, Ralph Merkel, Susan Sweeney Crum. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
My pleasure.
Glad to do it.
Next up, we talk with Councilman Jerry Miller and Councilman David James about the city budget. In particular, Project One, a youth summer jobs program that was cut by $80,000 to $0. And we also mentioned the Wisconsin recall. In a time where we're talking about job creation and need for jobs, particularly for, I think, the national average for teenagers, particularly African-American teenagers, about 40% unemployment. How can we explain 80,000 to zero?
I can't explain it. I want to put some funds in the budget to make sure the program goes. So I didn't suggest it, so I'm not going to explain it.
I can take that one. It's okay. This is the second budget that David and I have been involved with. Last year, the same thing happened. The external, there's a review process. The family services funds within the external agencies, and that's all the human needs type agencies like Project One and others. We reviewed, and Councilwoman Vicki Welch and I were on the committee, there were 100 applications. Each of the 8 people on this committee, and there are business people on this as well, looked at all 90 to 100 of these and evaluated them, and just like was done last year, we voted not to award any money. Now, what happened last year is during the June budget process, we added money back, and in this case, we added $80,000. But I'll tell you why I'm not in favor of Project One. It is focused, this particular program that he requested funding for was for basically job shadowing for 13, 14, and 15-year-olds. Age 16, 17, and 18, most all of that is provided through Kentuckiana Works, which the city supports. Problem is that the people at Kentuckiana Works don't have enough money to provide jobs to 16, 17, and 18-year-olds that want to work. So I believe it would be...
So you think it's a matter of just of money put in a better place?
It is a proven organization, a proven, well-run organization that...
Is there enough money for both?
I don't think so.
I would beg to differ.
But there may be. Maybe there is.
But how so? How do you beg to differ there?
Well, it's a matter of what our priorities are. You know, people say there's not enough money for this, there's not enough money for that. It's a matter of what your priorities are.
Is this a compassionate budget? That's the word we hear oftentimes. I've been beaten over the head with in press releases.
I would say that in my constituency area, where we have recently seen a tremendous amount of violence take place, that was very public, that keeping the minds and bodies of 13, 14, and 15-year-olds occupied throughout the summer is a very important thing and something that I intend to make sure happens.
And let me interject on this. I agree totally. You need to keep these kids occupied, but you also need to help them in a way that's most efficient.
So maybe so any recommendation to Mr. King
absolutely.
To shift that?
Well, focus? Not for Dr. King, but for the council.
Project One's a very popular program. And I mean, I think we saw yesterday, I've never seen that many teenagers in Metro. Or
you weren't there last year. It was about the same number. Dr. King is very good at bringing the kids out. But in my view, you ought to focus. We ought to be focusing. If we have an $80,000 rattling around that we need to find a home for, then we ought to put it in education, in things like Robbie Valentine's program, to where you're engaging the kids, you're giving them some activities, and you're giving some education. And that's a more effective way, in my view, of keeping kids off the street and engaged. The other problem is that employers really don't want to work. They don't want 13, 14s, and 15s working because they really are more, it's more, I won't say babysitting, but it's much more intense. It would be much better if you keep these 13, 14s, and 15s in an educational program, in some form of social program. Louisville Central Community Center, Bates, Canaan, a number of organizations, both religious and secular, have programs, Robbie Valentine's program. I think that is a much better solution for 13, 14s, and 15-year-olds. And let's put job money, more job money, into the 16, 17, and 18-year-old program, kids programs run by Kentuckiana Works.
Now, go ahead.
I would say that the 13, 14, 15-year-olds, and it all depends on what you call education. I believe being in the work environment and learning about different things and helping develop a work ethic is educational. I believe that if we don't have these kids occupied and earning funds at the same time, they will do other things to earn funds, and those things turn into violence.
Now that I have you two here, one thing I definitely want to talk to you about is what happened on Tuesday, not here in Kentucky, obviously, the Wisconsin recall, Governor Scott Walker. And the reason I want to talk to you two about it is because I remember last year, there was a little bit of a conversation on the council that ended up in some legislation about public unions. Councilman James, you introduced some legislation that would have unions have to file financial reports regarding around their negotiations with the city. And that obviously became somewhat of a contentious issue on the council. And I think council Democrats in particular cited Governor Walker stripping bargaining rights from public unions. What is y'all's reaction to his victory in Wisconsin?
I would say that wasn't a victory, it was a purchase. He purchased the election for $34 million. That's correct. $34 million is a lot of money to purchase an election with, and that's what took place. So it wasn't a victory.
Now, would you say the same thing? I mean, President Obama outraised John McCain in 2008, killed him in the money.
He outraised
did you say
it
that
individuals.
He
killed him
that he
money.
Bought the election?
So no, he raised it from individuals who donated money.
So a post-Citizens United
pockets.
Criticism of
yes,
of the
post-citizen criticism.
Well, let me interject. I received a lot of fundraising letters from the Scott Walker camp.
Did you contribute?
No, I did not. But I know, you know, Republican donors across the nation were sent money. So just to say that it came from, I don't know where it came from. I haven't seen his financial reports, but
I mean, a large
event,
amount of money was raised via these third party groups,
right.
And
but,
I believe Governor
so
Walker
was President Obama's
Barry
in
by like
2010.
8-1, 10-1.
So
I mean, when you outraise your opponent by 10-1,
right.
in a statewide race, yeah. You pretty much control the messaging.
Yeah,
and
I brought some Wisconsin cheese today, if anybody wants.
And when you have
here.
Private companies giving money to campaigns in large numbers to get their way. Then I don't consider that a victory.
But regardless, I mean, he won. And the fact that he won, doesn't that – I mean, that's – some people are saying the Democrats maybe should even call the recall. 60% of voters, I believe, said that they didn't feel that whatever Governor Walker did, whether you agree or disagree, was worthy of a recall. Mm-hmm. The recall is something you're supposed to use in a situation of official misconduct. Did this backfire on Democrats?
No, I don't think so. Not at all. I think that it was official misconduct.
It's a political disagreement that Democrats took to the level of, well, we don't like what you did. We want to kick you out of office.
It's not a matter of
a
we don't
Bill
like
Clinton
what you did. It's a matter of you hurt working families across the state.
So, I mean, now, I believe right after that, Governor Romney's Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney. His spokesman in Florida tweeted, "Pack it up, unions. It's over."
Mm-hmm.
Is this a significant blow to public unions?
It's a significant blow to democracy.
Councilman Miller, democracy itself is now under attack.
Democracy itself. A little dramatic, but I would take issue that it was a purchased election any more than President Obama purchased an election with union and Hollywood and Wall Street money. So I think that's just rhetoric.
You think we'll see something like this in Kentucky? I mean, your point last year, I believe, was, well, Louisville's a union town. But the state isn't a union town.
Well, let's make a distinction. And I've tried to make this before, and I'll try to make it again. And that is, the issue in Wisconsin is public sector unions, not unions.
But
families.
But there have been reports already saying
there are 90.
There will be these similar sorts of legislation introduced in other states that we could see, if maybe not necessarily the same type of legislation stripping away bargaining rights, but we could see other states take on unions in a more aggressive way. And even though what you introduced or what you were talking about last year with these financial reports wasn't the exact same thing, it was challenging Metro employees, public employees, wasn't it?
I draw a very strong distinction between public sector unions and private sector. Private sector, it's an arm's length negotiation between two independent entities, not so much in public sector unions. So I really don't feel that what goes on in Wisconsin is relevant to Metro Louisville.
But are you supportive
of really
what Governor Walker
about
did?
An effort to do something like they did, because you'd have to do it in Frankfort.
But are you supportive of Governor Walker and what he did in Wisconsin?
I think he took the actions he needed to take to get his finances back in order, and evidence shows that he did. It would have been good if the people, the leaders of Greece and Spain and Italy and Portugal and Ireland had taken steps like that, and they wouldn't be in the problems they're in right now.
Well, I would disagree with that, because the public unions in Wisconsin had already agreed with Governor Walker on the concessions that he wanted. So what he did above and beyond that was totally irrelevant, because the price constraints had already been in place. So for a person that didn't campaign on that, didn't talk about that until they got into office, to negotiate with them in good faith, knowing that you were going to try and strip them as soon as they agreed to the things you'd already asked for, I think was very disingenuous.
Well, gents, I am sure this debate will continue between the two of you and between all of us. Councilman Jerry Miller, thank you very much. Councilman David James, thank you very much.
Thank you. You hope you have a great day.
I will.
Enjoy the weather.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Noise and Notes is produced by WFPL. For more information, visit WFPL.org.